Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? Today is Thanksgiving Day in the United States of America. Did you know that? It's of particular interest to public health individuals all around the globe this year because they celebrate Thanksgiving like we celebrate Christmas. So there will be people gathering in houses. There will be people eating and drinking together in close proximity. So the eyes of the world will be on what happens next. What happens next in America? And they're having a really bad time of it over there. So they can't afford to have another spike due to Thanksgiving. But it looks like that's the way it's going to go. And I wonder, I'm sure it will colour the decision making of our politicians and public health officials in the coming weeks as to what they decide to do over our Christmas. So that's what's happening today. And happy Thanksgiving to anybody who's celebrating Thanksgiving today. Enjoy the turkey. Enjoy the turkey. Yeah, Thanksgiving and Christmas. We did it last night. We watched our first Christmas movie. I don't know if it's too early. It probably is a bit early. 25th of November. It's a month before Christmas. And Christmas Chronicles 2 landed on Netflix. If you didn't see Christmas Chronicles 1, it stars Kurt Russell as Santa Claus. And in Christmas Chronicles 2, Mrs. Claus makes an appearance. And Mrs. Claus is played by Kurt Russell's real-life wife, Goldie Hawn. And it's a wonderful Christmas fantasy, and we're brought up to the North Pole and Santa's village and all the elves and everything, and there's drama and there's baddies and there's goodies and there's baddies who become goodies and all that sort of thing. So it's 2 hours long though, 2 hours. I think most movies now could do with a good editor. And I think, what's wrong with 90 minutes? What is wrong with 90 minutes for a movie? I always thought that's the perfect length. When I look at the duration and I see anything over 90 minutes, I go, oh God, can I really... And most movies feel like at 90 minutes, I'm done now. Go on, wrap it up there. Wrap it up there. Thanks very much. So have you watched your first Christmas movie? 51551 for text. I forgot to mention that. And ray@rte.ie for emails. And we got some emails overnight and I'll have to come back to them. But first to Charlie, 2-year-old Charlie from Waterford. And Charlie is blaming everything on coronavirus. He's age 2, and anything that happens in his house that Charlie is blamed for, he says, no, it wasn't me, it was coronavirus. So listen out for Charlie and his explanations of what's happening around the house. Here we go.
Where's your Weetabix all over the table?
Coronavirus.
Hey, coronavirus.
Where did you hit Emma?
Coronavirus.
Of course, coronavirus, yeah.
Coronavirus.
Yeah. That is no excuse. Don't link to me.
Why?
Because coronavirus.
Charlie? Why did you spill your milk?
Coronavirus.
Coronavirus. And that was Emma, brilliantly. Age 9. Charlie's older sister in the background. That's no excuse. That's no excuse. And Charlie isn't on his own, I'd say, in citing the coronavirus as an excuse for things. I'd say it's been used all over the country. Why isn't that ready? Coronavirus. Why aren't you doing that? Coronavirus. Why hasn't that law been passed? Coronavirus. Why haven't we sorted that out in government? Coronavirus. Anyway, that's Charlie there, and you can see that as well as hear it up on independent.ie. That's where we spotted that this morning. You know these hacks, these cleaning hacks? An Australian mum has shared her genius hack for cleaning the washing machine using just one item. And the results are equal parts incredible and truly gross. So Mums Who Clean is a Facebook group. And what you have to do is you take one of those things that you put into your dishwasher, put it into your washing machine at the highest temperature and let it do a cycle. And ta-da! It's cleaned. And it takes all the gunky stuff, all the slime and everything comes to the fore and it cleans it all out and it's all gleaming at the end of it all. And it was interesting because we were talking about this morning in our Zoom meeting. And every female on the Zoom meeting had heard about this hack and none of the lads had. So that's the reality of life. I know. Domesticity isn't in the male gene pool. I know, and we should be changing it. And it is changing. And I do a little bit around the house, not as much as I should. But I wouldn't know how to clean the washing machine. So there you are. one of those dishwasher things into the washing machine, highest temperature, full cycle, and Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt, and all that sort of thing. We were talking about Netflix there with Christmas Chronicles 2. The Queen's Gambit, they don't release figures often, only for big successes. But Netflix Queen's Gambit, the streaming service's breakout hit about chess, is almost its most watched limited series yet, the company said on Monday. So 62 million households worldwide have watched The Queen's Gambit in its first 4 weeks. I haven't seen it yet, but I believe it's brilliant. And it's about a young girl who plays chess, and it's based on a 37-year-old novel of the same name, which has gone back into the New York Times bestsellers list. So there, it's up there with Tiger King and The Irishman when it comes to successes on Netflix. So there you go, I suppose. All those people can't be wrong, so I'll have to put that in to watch. The other day we spoke to Rory Halpin from Spirazzi. He's the CEO of Spirazzi, and Cheriboo, who have used Spirazzi's services. And they're a small organisation, and what they do is they help people, asylum seekers who are coming into this country, who have been victims of torture. And they do amazing work, and they can't get to all the people who need their help. Anyway, when we were talking to Rory the other day, we forgot to mention that they're looking for you to help them. The campaign is called Future Not Fear, and people can text the word future to 50300 to donate €4. Future Not Fear, and future to 50300. And there's an article in the Irish Times today about asylum seekers, and the quote which makes the headline is that moving to Ireland is like winning the lotto. And you see, as I said the other day when we were talking to Cheriboo, who came from Uganda and witnessed her husband been murdered and was the victim herself of various torture and everything else, and what we were saying was that we don't appreciate what we have here. We have peace. And people who come from Syria and Uganda and other war-torn countries, that's what they want. They're willing to come here, live in direct provision, get whatever it is, €30 a week, because they have peace. Like winning the lotto. Rosemary was on I'll get to this, and we leave everything else to later on because we've loads to do today. Rosemary was to ray@rte.ie. She says, I'm unashamedly going to try and curry favour with you. I'm on page 241 of A Page for My Life. If that doesn't do it, the person I'm writing to you about is a resident of Rathcoffey, County Kildare. And we all know how the mention of Kildare usually swings it with you. Right, Rosemary. She says, my uncle Bernie Campbell will be 105 today, the 26th of November. Like my father, in my story, he was a farmer. He's the last of a family of 11, the only one to make it over the 100 mark. He lost his darling wife Eileen in October 2014. At his 100th birthday party, he said the reason for his long, healthy life had been all down to her, Eileen. The family, originally from Mayo, moved to Kildare in the 1930s, that is. He has remained a very proud Mayo man living in his beloved Kildare. He has four sons and a daughter who take wonderful care of him at home. Unfortunately, due to COVID, we haven't been able to visit. We just want him to know who he'll be in our thoughts and hearts, sending him love until we can embrace again. Happy birthday, Uncle Bernie, from all your nieces and nephews. That's Rosemary Campbell. Happy birthday, Bernie. 105 today. That's an amazing age, isn't it? And Rosemary says, P.S. can you play Young at Heart? I have it lined up, Rosemary. But before we go to that, we have to talk to you about our quiz of today. And Bernie, be good at that. Having lived for over a century. Yeah, today being the 26th of November, we have 10 questions on the big stories of the day, the scientific breakthroughs, songs, movies, births, deaths, all in there. And we need two people to answer 5 questions each after 4 o'clock. Great prize this week. A fabulous day at the River Lee Hotel. It's a core in Cork. It's a Doyle Collection Hotel. Two-night stay with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening with their award-winning bar and restaurant, The River Club, which is a stylish all-weather terrace and luxurious bedrooms all in the heart of Cork. Weekends have never looked better. And you can find out all the details there, doylecollection.com. I might say that again after 4 o'clock because I didn't do it justice there. Anyway, we're looking for two people on, and to qualify, you have to answer our qualifying question. Today, it is this. Which county in Ireland is known as the Wee County? Which county in Ireland is known as the Wee County? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. Which county in Ireland is known as the Wee County? And we'll be talking to people after 4 o'clock. Thank you. Thank you. So Bernie, 105 today. Happy birthday. Frank Sinatra, Young at Heart, on RTE Radio 1. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Congratulations to Dara McAnulty. His book, The Diary of a Naturalist, won the Best Newcomer category last night at the Irish Book Awards. Indeed, congratulations to everybody who won last night. Donal Ryan and posthumously Keelan Shanley and everybody who won in the Irish Book Awards. But particularly Dara McAnulty, The Diary of a Naturalist. Well done, Dara. Goldie and Kurt are not married yet, but they're life partners. Nearly better than being married, I think. And they seem to still have the sparkle in each other's eyes for each other, if you know what I mean. Put tea towels in with the dishwasher tablet into washing machine. It will give them a good clean and helps remove old, hard to remove tea stains. And you're not the only one who suggests that. John in Waterford has been on. He says, as the chap who repairs our washing machine said, if you're using the dishwasher capsule method, be sure and throw in a few old tea towels or something similar, as most modern washing machines judge the weight of the wash to save water. So if you put the tab in on its own, it may not work properly. Thanks for that, John. 51551 ray@rte.ie. A good load of calendars. Now, we're not going to get through them all today. I'll do four today, and then we'll do more tomorrow. But the Irish Whale and Dolphin Groove have a lovely 2021 calendar. I'm just looking at June 2021, and there's a lovely aerial shot of basking shark activity off the West Clare coast. And that's a lovely one. So IWDG, you'll be able to get your hands on that calendar. Thanks for sending that in. And the people down in the Dogs for the Disabled, down in Cork, Opening Doors to Change Lives. That's a very cute calendar there as well. And that's on sale from their website. And Down Syndrome Limerick, this is different because each month has a work of art done by one of the people who attend Down Syndrome Limerick, their Saturday art classes, age between 2 and 14. So that's very special there. So thanks for sending that. That's on sale there. And this one, still having the crack. The Ballybunion Active Retirement Association 2020 calendar. This is good value for money because it's an 18-month calendar, you see. None of that 12-month rubbish. Anybody can have a 12-month calendar. So you have not only 2020, you have 2021. Oh, no, this is from last year. Oh, I see. This is right. This is a current one and it's going into next year. Well, what they've done is they've taken pictures and then they've put them into Photoshop or whatever and they've treated them. So what you get is surreal images combining art and photography. All members of the Ballybunion Active Retirement. That's a great calendar. Still on sale now. And then we got an email from Paul O'Farrell, who's he's coordinator of on Shield CDP, and I'll get to that in a moment. Great idea with the charity calendar competition. Good opportunity to raise awareness and give groups an opportunity to promote their work. Fine. What are you doing? What are you going to do with all them when the competition ends? Well, it's not really a competition. We will announce at the end that there's a charity calendar of the year, but it's not really a competition. Would you care to donate them to a senior citizens initiative? Cheeky, I know, but you don't ask. What you don't ask, you don't get. We are a community development project working on Christmas packs to be distributed to isolated seniors in the Dublin 7 area. Given that we are a community project, we're operating on a shoestring budget and we'd be delighted to take all those old calendars off your hands and redistribute them to our senior clients. That's Paul O'Farrell there. Of course, Paul, you ask first, so you get them. We'll send them out to you when we're done with them. And it looks like there's going to be a lot of them. So thanks to everybody. Keep them coming in to The Ray D'Arcy Show, RT Donnybrook, Dublin 4. Can you give huge congratulations to Dervla Burke from Celebridge, who graduates today. Unfortunately, because of COVID, she's graduating online at home. Have a great day anyway from Nana, her aunties, uncles and her cousins. And that's to Dervla Burke. Well done, Dervla. Now, there's loads of things happening today. I have to tell you about all these things. The big Christmas thank you returns. Now, we did this over the years. I think we gave it a rest last year, but it returns this year. And thanks to our good friends in SuperValue, they're helping us out with this. So just to explain what happens. So you tell us about somebody that you want to say thank you to. You know, somebody who's helped you out through the year. And there's going to be more people this year than ever before because people had to depend on friends, family, people in the community to help them out, because people were isolated, were in lockdown, all those sort of things. So if you have somebody in your life that you want to say a huge public thank you to, what you do is you write as much detail as you can in an email, wax lyrical about this person and their qualities and what they've done for you and how they've changed your life. Send it in to ray@rte.ie. Then we go through them all. It's a difficult task. We go through them all. We pick out the most deserving ones and then we surprise them on air. So we get you up and we have you in cahoots and you have the other person standing by the phone. Sometimes people tell them that there's a package arriving and they need to be by the phone. Then we ring them, put them live on air, surprise them. And then we say, look, we got this email in from you, and we read the email out, and then at the end of it all, we give them something nice for Christmas. A bespoke present, depending on what you think they'd like. It could be a trip to see Manchester United. It could be a new telly. It could be an iPad. It could be a break in a spa down the country. Whatever it is, you decide, and we will give it to them, thanks to our friends in SuperValu. So it's the big Christmas thank you. ray@rte.ie, somebody in your life that you want to say a very public and big thank you to this Christmas. And I know this year, more than ever, there's going to be people looking for that opportunity because people rose to the challenge of the pandemic and COVID-19. And we've had some amazing acts of kindness and community spirit around the country. So we want to hear about those and we'll be able to say thank you publicly on the radio. So that's it. ray@rte.ie. I'll tell you more about that as the days go on. We have to take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551 for your text. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we spoke to Ellen Kalish, director and founder of the Ravensbeard Wildlife Centre in New York, about Rockefeller, a little owl who became world famous because she was caught up in a big Christmas tree that was transported 150 miles to New York to the Rockefeller Center. And when they opened it up, there was little Rockefeller in it. Ellen's back on the line. How are you doing, Ellen?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good to talk to you again. So when we spoke the last time, it was all fresh. There was news and you were getting phone calls from people all over the world wanting to talk to you about Rockefeller. And at the time, you told us that inevitably you would have to release little Rockefeller out into the wild. That has happened.
Yes. Yes, that has happened. It was Tuesday night. We'd gone out and scouted for a good release site and found a perfect site on the side of a mountain on some friend's property. So that's where we decided to release her, and she flew away beautifully.
Yeah. We put that little piece of video up on our website there, and we've tweeted.
Oh, good.
We've tweeted good. It out. It's a lovely piece. Is that you holding little Rockefeller?
Yes.
Yes.
That was me.
There's a moment there where she. It looks like she's not going to fly. Looks she.
Yes, it was very interesting. When I let go of her feet, she just stood on the top of my hand.
Yeah.
And kind of looked around. And didn't go anywhere, and my arm started to get tired. And I thought, oh, you know, this is just another moment. I should just take it all in because it was so beautiful to see her, you know, find out where she wanted to go in her immediate flight. And it was very special.
Remind us about little Rockefeller, because she is little. She's a very small breed of owl, isn't she?
Yes. One of the smallest that we have in northeastern America. And so she's about 5 inches tall, weighs 91, 92 grams, and has an 18 to 20 foot, or 20 foot, 20 inch wingspan. Mm. So they're little nymphs in the woods, and they're very prolific, and they're all around us. And we just never get to see them.
Yeah. And she's like one of those little toys, you know, the ones with the huge head and the small body. Like, she's all face, isn't she?
Yes.
Yeah.
She really is. The body is just, you know, to hold the wings and the belly.
Right, yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, it's all face.
All face, yeah. So have you found out anything else about it, more than what I said there? So they wrapped up the tree to transport it into the Rockefeller Center, and she was wrapped up in the tree. And then they, when they discovered it, they rang you and you took care of her.
Yes.
Just remind people what state she was in when you got her.
She was fairly dehydrated, very hungry, and otherwise her condition was considered good.
Mm.
We took her to a few veterinarians and had a saw wet specialist look her over. We just wanted to make sure she was going to have the best chances that she could have. So once she was fed up and took a few baths and got her feathers in migration condition, she was ready to go.
Mm. And you fed her on mice. We established that.
Yes.
So one mouse a day or more than that? Or
The first day she ate two.
Right.
And then after that, it was one mouse a day. Yes.
Right. And would she eat it in one go or would she spread it across the day?
No, she would spread it across the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when did you discover that it was a she?
When we took her to the saw wet specialist and he weighed her and he said, "This isn't a male. This is just borderline on a female by her weight." And it made sense to me then that the males are so much lighter and smaller than the females.
Ah.
So, you know, she was just underweight when she came in. And once she started to fill out her body weight, that's when we realized she was a female.
Okay. Now, we were saying at the time that it would make a brilliant Christmas story. And I was suggesting that maybe I'd buy the rights for the movie as well. But the problem is, well, it's probably not a problem. We have to use our imagination now as to what happens next, because Miss Rockefeller, as she's now called, is not tagged.
Correct. She wasn't tagged and we didn't put any monitors on. We just wanted her to have a peaceful, restful life. And really, we didn't want people following her or harassing her. And so that's why we decided not to do anything to trace her. Yeah.
So we can all write our own ending for her.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's
nice. What we believe will happen is that she will go south for the winter, maybe down to South Carolina, Georgia, Florida area, and she will come back in the spring and find a mate and start the cycle.
Yeah. Little Rockefellers.
Yeah, it turned out she was a first year hatch.
Oh, right. So she hasn't had chicks yet.
No. So she was a youngster herself.
Aha.
And
right.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. We're hoping.
So I hope that all this global attention has helped out the Ravensbeard Wildlife Centre in some way.
It really has. And I just want to thank all the donors and the people that care and the phone calls and the emails and texts. It's just been such a lovely experience. 20 years of doing this. And now, you know, to get this kind of recognition just proves that I was on the right path all along.
Yeah, great. Vindication for your work. Ellen Kalish, yes. Thanks so much for talking to us. I hope we'll talk again.
I hope so too.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you so much.
Bye now. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or Ray at RTE.ie. Our next guest was this year's winner of the Broadsheet Columnist of the Year at the Irish Journalism Awards, Fintan O'Toole. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Is that important, that sort of accolade, the getting the Broadsheet Columnist of the Year? Is that important to you?
The cool thing is to say, of course not. I don't care. But yeah, I mean, everybody loves getting praise. You know, of course. You know, it doesn't really wear off, does it? I think, actually, maybe the older you get, the more you need it. You know, because you get more insecure. You know, are they going to forget about me now?
Are you getting more insecure as you get older?
Well, I'm slightly exaggerating. You know,
yeah.
I suppose, you know, I've been writing that column now and inflicting it on the people of Ireland for 32 years.
Wow.
So you think, well, actually, you know yourself you can do it, but I suppose you also maybe at the back of your head is the thing of like, well, you know, have people heard enough of me now?
Because you told me before, and it's the thing I often quote, that you used to write your columns in your head while you run. So you have to listen to yourself a lot in your head, writing your columns.
You do, and I still do that. And, you know, the funny thing is I do find that I revise more, maybe I'm more self-critical as time goes on. You know, I read over the stuff again and again and again, you know, before I'll press send. You know, this is a terrible thing to say, but I remember when I was 20 or, you know, around that age, and reading columnists in the Irish Times and elsewhere. And, you know, with the arrogance of youth, you know, it's saying, I've read all that before. Yes, you know, they've written it all before. It's like, you know, I'm fed up with these people. You know, they really need some new voices in there. And I'm absolutely certain, right, that there's lots of people out there saying, I've heard everything he has to say before. You know, and, you know, they really need some new voices in the Irish Times. So that's just the life cycle, isn't it?
But there are regularly new voices in the Irish Times, aren't there?
There are, of course. No, and actually, you know, I suppose like when I started out, there just weren't that many columnists. Yes. You know, it's a field which has burgeoned, and some people think that's a very bad thing, and some people think it's a good thing.
Yeah, but why do you think that's happened? Is it because facts are available everywhere?
Yeah, it's two things. I mean, one of them is not a good reason. I mean, to be quite honest, you know, which is columnists are cheap.
Right.
I mean, relatively speaking, right? So, you know, you can put a lot of opinion into journalism. It doesn't take a team of 20 people to do an investigation over 6 months, you know. And I mean, I don't think that's true of the Irish Times, but there's some places where, you know, you just plaster a lot of opinion over the news. But I think the good reason is the one you say. I do think on, you know, the thing that justifies it, I think, is that, you know, again, I'm sounding terrible old here, but like when I started writing in 88 in the Irish Times, I mean, you bought the newspaper, and a lot of people just read it cover to cover, and you never really knew what they thought, you know, or, you know, so most people read a newspaper. Maybe they might, if they were kind of news junkies, they read an evening newspaper as well, and then they watched RTE News. And you know, and then there was maybe 7 days or Today Tonight or Primetime, whatever it was called, you know. But there was a relatively limited amount of stuff that was coming at you, whereas now every one of us, you know, is bombarded with news and factlets, you know, bits and pieces of stuff. So the desire, I think, to have somebody make
sense
some
of it. Does it make sense of it?
Yeah, to give some meaning to it.
Yes.
And you know, say that actually, you know, there's you can join up some dots here. You know, you can actually see, well, okay, what this person is saying now might be all very well, but, you know, 3 years ago they said the opposite. Or, you know, that's our idea of context, of trying to give people some sort of a map that that they can use to make sense of all the stuff that's gone on.
And do you think that there should be, with every, you know, column that you or anybody else writes, that there should be an introductory paragraph about you and your political beliefs, your religious beliefs, just to give it a context, you know, Fintan O'Toole, blah 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 blah. So then from there you read your opinions and you can say, oh yeah, well that makes sense because he believes a certain thing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, I think with me anyway, that's very much there anyway.
So yeah, with people, well, yeah, well, I suppose
there.
But, yeah, but if you people know, is coming it, to you, if people are coming to you for the first time, I suppose it's not. And the other thing is there? I often say this: is there a pressure to have a column every week? You know, do you find yourself having to have an opinion on something that you don't, you know, that you have to nearly contrive an opinion?
No, it's a funny business, right? You know, I remember when I started doing it, I thought, oh my God, the terror of, you know, the blank sheet, or it became the blank screen, you know. And actually the problem is the complete opposite, you know. So it becomes a way of life, you know, so you're always thinking about stuff. I do two a week for the Irish Times, you know, and I'm probably, you know, often doing something else somewhere else in America or whatever else, you know. And actually the problem really is not, you know, what do I think about this thing? It's which of the things I'm thinking about might make a good column now, like if you've done it a long time, you have certain kind of skills, right? You can do it, you know, that's not the problem in a way. The problem is it going to be good? And by good, I simply mean, you know, is somebody going to keep reading it? Like it takes about 6 minutes, 7 minutes maybe, to read a Fintan O'Toole column in the Irish Times, right? That's 6 minutes out of your day, you know, and I have to justify to you, or actually I don't have to, because you'll just, you know, switch off to something else. You know, the attention span isn't that great. So what I'm always thinking about is, you know, if I start this with this paragraph, is somebody going to go on to the next paragraph, and then they're going to go on to the next one, and are they going to get to the end of the thing?
And would the Irish Times have the metrics to tell you that they started that particular article and didn't get to the end of it? Yeah. So is everyone chasing click now? Clicks? Is that what's happening in the Irish Times and other papers?
Yes, you know. Right. So like again, you know, for the first half of my career, you see, nobody knew. You know, this was the great thing. I mean, in a way, if people were honest, they sort of wrote for their colleagues, because the only people you really talked to about what you'd written, you know, was the people that you worked with, or your peers, you know, your friends, your family, whatever. But that's all gone. I mean, once it shifted onto the internet, of course, then the metrics are there, as you say, and the metrics are kind of funny, because they provide a sort of sugar rush. You know, if the thing is going well. You know, because remember now, like you might hit something that might be read in America, it might be read in Britain, it might be read in India, you know, anywhere people speak the language, maybe. My stuff is often behind a paywall, so that sometimes doesn't operate. But sometimes, I did a thing about Trump, I think, a couple of years ago. And it was like 1.5 million people read it.
Wow. There'd be a sugar rush there, yes.
That's the sugar rush. Yes. But the downside is, right, then that sometimes it's really important that you take the responsibility to write about something that actually people don't really want to read about. You know? So there's loads of stuff that's really, really important. Yeah. And any columnist could draw up in about, you know, 10 minutes. This is the list of things I know I'm going to get lots of hits about just because of the subject.
Yes.
You know, if it's to do with sex, if it's to do with, well, it used to be abortion, you know, the IRA, there's the Catholic Church. But, you know, there's a whole lot of other stuff that you have a responsibility to write about, like child poverty, that's very boring. The hard thing actually is to resist that, you know, to say, look, okay, it's not going to be in the top five most read things in the Irish Times this week, you know, the thing that appears on the back page on a Saturday.
Yes.
But that's fine, you know. So you need to be able to say to yourself, look, I know why this is important.
And the other thing, like what your job as opposed to 32 years ago is interactive, in that people, you know, can get to you. They can tell you what they think of what you think. And because you're obviously opinionated, that you're going to get strong opinions the other way. So does that bother you? And where do they go? Like, do they land in your email account, or where do they go?
Yeah, you know, I suppose in a funny way, like Irish people are always very good at telling you what they thought of you. Oddly enough, and I think this is a slightly strange phenomenon, I don't know if it's just my own experience or whether it's a more general thing, I think people are now less inclined to tell you what they think in person and more inclined to do it. They might write an email, they might comment, but I think, you see, when anonymity came in, it sort of changed things, you know, because you could make an anonymous comment on Twitter or something about, you know, this guy's a West Brit or he's an idiot or, you know, whatever else it is. And feel somehow that you were satisfied. Whereas what used to happen much more is people just stop you on the street, you know? And I actually thought that was fantastic. You know, I worked as a journalist in New York, you know, and like nobody stopped you on the street. It was just like, they didn't know who the hell you were. It didn't matter. And there was something really bracing, but also really good about being in an atmosphere, you know, where sometimes people come up to you and, you know, it was a real pain in the bum because you were, you know, having a drink in a pub, or you were with your wife or something, and, you know, they'd want to tackle you about something, and you'd have to maybe politely tell them, you know, maybe another time. But you know, most people actually were very good about saying, look, I really disagree with you about that. I think you really should look at this or think about that. And I find people are less inclined to do that. And I don't know whether that's a more general thing. I suspect it might be to do with the way the culture has changed. I mean, maybe you, I don't know, how do you find that? I mean, do people talk to you less, do you think, now, in that casual way than they used to? Or, I don't
know. Yeah, well, yes, it's hard to remember beyond lockdown, really.
The ancient world.
People are mainly nice, you know what I mean, and I'm not issue driven, really, so people smile and they say, you know, well done or whatever, and I think people who have anything negative to say probably avoid you or grimace at you, so it's fine. Yeah. So this year of all years, like, there's loads of things to write about, isn't there? Like, it's you know, Brexit, we thought at the beginning of the year Brexit was going to be the big thing. Little did we know. Yeah. And did you sort of half predict a plague, or did you suggest that the only thing that could make things worse was a plague, or what did you say?
Like, one of my general duties is, you know, you write the sort of big piece at the beginning of the year, like, well, you know, what's the year going to bring, sort of speculative stuff, you know, it's just part of the job, you know. Yeah. But I think, or looking, you know, looking back, and I think I remember saying, either over the Christmas period or, you know, very early in January, you know, that because if you remember, the apocalyptic fires were burning in Australia.
Yes.
There was a plague of locusts in Africa.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I remember saying that the only thing we're missing now for the biblical apocalypse is a plague. And, you know, I wasn't being particularly facetious about it, because I was trying to draw attention to the, you know, particularly the climate crisis and things like that. But Jesus, you know, who knew that?
What do you think about it, Fintan? You know, let's talk now. But very much in, you know, March, April, May, we were talking about taking stock of our lives and how this was going to change us and how the world couldn't have continued the way it was going with consumerism and all that, and this is whatever, this is what we needed, some people were saying,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Do you think, you know, it will have a long-term permanent effect on the planet?
I do think so, and I think, you know, and I want to be very careful with this. I don't want to be, you know, thinking like, you know, isn't it great? No, it's not. It's horrific.
Yes.
It's caused such grief, you know, and such pain to, you know, millions and millions of people. There's nothing good about it in that sense. However, it has jolted us out of the stuff that we take for granted. You know, there's a phrase of Samuel Beckett's, you know, in Waiting for Godot, I think they say, habit is a great deadener. You know?
Yeah.
And we're deadened by habit, aren't we? You know, and we just take things for granted. You know, stuff we all knew, like we all knew, for example, that there's something deeply wrong about shunting older people away from society into homes, you know.
Mm.
And I'm not saying some of those homes are fantastic and some of the people who work in them are really great people. I'm not criticizing them at all, you know, but something's kind of, we know there's something wrong about this. Most older people want to be in their own homes. Huge numbers of them could be in their own homes with the right support. And actually, it might be even cheaper, but that's not the big issue. But, like, you know, why have we organized society in such a way that so many people who just want to be in their own homes can't be? And then this thing comes along and we realize, oh, you know, this isn't just about not being nice. It's about killing people. You know, it's about the fact that these congregated settings are actually really, really terrible for a lot of people when something like this hits. And out of sight is out of mind, and out of mind means you don't get what you need. And, you know, we did very badly with that stuff, you know, in the early
days. But do you think that's going to change, Fintan?
I think it has to, Ray, doesn't it? You know,
yeah, I'm sure you've said, over the years, over those 32 years, this has to change. This has to change about housing or about whatever. I see your piece today, like, our government should be a fox, it's actually a snake. And something that I've said over the years as well, that we live in a country where our government is reactive and not proactive. But that's a political reality. Because when you're proactive, it means preventative measures. And you don't get any votes for preventative measures in the main, do you? Because it's invisible.
It's a brilliant point, Ray. You know, and I was just thinking about this even with things like vaccines, for example, you know, which is going to be a huge issue, you know, which is, why are people against vaccines? Well, some people are against vaccines because they never connect with the stuff that didn't happen.
Yes, you know, like, yes, that's so, the thing. Like, yeah.
the hundreds of millions of people who haven't died or who haven't got very sick, the kids who didn't get deaf because they got rubella, you know, all that stuff.
Invisible.
If it doesn't happen, it doesn't matter. It's invisible. Yes. It's out of mind. And you're absolutely right about that. But where I think this thing might be different, right, is that it's gone so deep, right? So part of the problem is that we all know these issues, you know, but so long as they're not directly affecting us today, we can sort of say, oh, Jesus, I don't have time to think about that. Let's leave it, you know. Whereas this thing has actually changed the way we're living, you know. And some of those ways it's changed are very interesting, you know. Like, to take a simple thing, right? One of the things that's really bloody awful about our society is we're the most car dependent society in Europe. Mm. How did we do that? You know, how did we manage to make ourselves a society where one of the least, have to have a car?
Well, we're one of the least densely populated countries in Europe. So that's but that's a fact. So that might be part of the reason we're dependent on cars.
But also it's shocking planning. You know, it's an inability and an unwillingness to think about. You know, that's all very well to be least densely populated if that's what people want. But huge numbers of people, as you know, are they can't live in the cities because they can't afford to. Yeah. You know, we've made Dublin in particular uninhabitable for people who don't earn 70, 80, 90, 100,000 a year. You know, at the very least as a couple, but often sometimes even individuals. You know, and so there are people living 60 miles away from where they work. You know, that part of it at least is unnecessary. And what's really been interesting, like, is that we've now had most of a year of a lot of people. Like, at the beginning of the year, we had about 200,000 people, I think, worked from home. We now have 800,000.
Right. You know,
it's the biggest single social change in terms of the relationship between work and life that's ever happened in the country. And it's happened with incredible speed. And we've adapted to it, you know, for the people who can do it. Now, I know there's huge numbers of people who can't do that, right? But nevertheless, you know, you have 800,000 households, you know, whose lives have changed really remarkably through this. And one of the things that means is that they're not getting in the car at 5:30 in the morning to sit in traffic for an hour and a half and then going through day's work and then sitting in traffic for another hour and a half before they get back to see their kids. I don't think people are going to easily go back and say, geez, I really miss the morning, you know, sitting on the on the M50, you know.
Yeah.
And I think we found that actually there are things we can do that you know, seemed impossible, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 months ago. Like, we couldn't get homeless people off the streets. Just couldn't be done. And then it was done in a week. You know, we found places for people, you know. Do you throw those people back out on the street, you know, when everything goes back to quote-unquote normal?
Yeah.
You know, so I think we've discovered possibilities that are really concrete things.
I'd like to think so. Okay. Joe Biden, you wrote a big piece for an American publication. Was it a review of his book? I read it there last week, Promise Me Dad. But the mourner-in-chief, you described him as.
Yeah. You know, he's a fascinating figure, isn't he? Because he's so marked by death, you know, by grief. You know, as people know, he had this, he'd just been elected to the Senate and he hadn't even taken his seat. I think he was 30, you know, and his wife and his daughter were killed in a car crash and his two kids were badly injured, you know. And then, you know,
he got
back on his feet and then Bo, you know. And it's the thing he does, like, I don't know if you remember him as vice president, like the thing he was so extraordinary at doing was going to funerals. And I don't mean that in any sort of, you know, disparaging way at all. I mean, he was actually extraordinarily good at it. There was a really moving thing in his book, you know, he was just describing, he had to go to the funeral of funerals of police officers who were killed in New York. It was a horrible thing. They were just kind of shot randomly. You know, one of them was a Chinese American and he goes to the house. And the family don't really speak English even much. And the father, he just describes, really moving, like the father just kind of clinging to him, you know, and he just knowing the man just needed. And, you know, and it's very moving. And then at the end of the book, he's talking about his own son's funeral and he's coming out of the church. And there's the Chinese man, you know, who just comes up to him and hugs him. And you can say it's very sentimental and all this, but it's really moving, you know.
Yes,
and it's particularly with Trump's carelessness about human life, his just absolute contempt for individuals, his complete lack of empathy. So, you know, there's something about Biden at this moment when America is in such grief. And remember, it's the country in the world where most people have died.
I know.
Like it's a shocking thing.
I see yesterday the most number of deaths since early May yesterday. So it's, yeah. And now yeah. they're going to yeah. Thanksgiving today and, you know, the knock-on yeah. effects of that. It's
So it gives Biden, you know, he has a horrible thing to come into because you've got 75 million people who voted for Trump, knowing what Trump was like, but also knowing that Trump had said all year that he basically wasn't going to accept the result of the election. You know, so it's a really serious thing in a democracy to have nearly half the electorate saying, I'm going to vote for the guy who's not going to accept the
vote. Yeah, but isn't that a terrible indictment on the Democrats then? Is it not? Like all of these things, you know, like Brexit and the election of Trump and all that sort of thing, does it not point, is not symptomatic of something that's wrong with the other side, if you like?
Yes, that's absolutely the case. But I think we've got to be careful not to you know, to primarily blame the people who are responsible. You know.
But for example, if the Democrats were offering a real alternative, you know, back when Trump was elected, maybe Trump wouldn't have been elected. And if the, you know, the anti-Brexit people were, you know, doing what they should be doing, then maybe we wouldn't be in this situation with Brexit looming in, you know, what is it now, 5 weeks, is it? 5 weeks, less than 5 weeks?
Yeah, no. You're absolutely right. Like, you know, like the underlying thing here, and it's true of Brexit, it's true of Trump, it's true of so many other kind of upheavals around the world, is inequality, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right, like that the left or the centre-left just hasn't done enough about inequality. Inequality is supposed to be the thing that the left is interested in, you know? And yet we've had, over the last 20 years, you know, we've had this extraordinary situation in the developed world where vast new wealth has been created. You know, we've had all these new technologies, new industries, vast new wealth, and overwhelmingly it's gone to the top 1%.
Yeah.
And even within that, it's gone to the top 1% of the 1%.
And the problem with them, those industries as well, they don't create a lot of employment. You know the big tech companies like Google and Amazon, they don't, you know, compared to traditional industries, they don't create a lot of employment. So anyway, we might go for a pint sometime. Will you ask Vinton about the weird, unusual stuff he cooked in the restaurant? We don't have time, Anne, but we can do that again.
Can I just say that I'm really sorry for that, and I hope the Irish people will forgive me.
Okay. And I didn't get to talk to you about becoming a grandfather. Was that the end of last year?
The one thing that's killing me over this bloody lockdown. My grandson is in Copenhagen, you know, and I see him on Skype every weekend. But he's two, you know, and it's such a lovely age. Yeah. Oh God, you just, you know, you really miss getting your hands on him. But anyway, that'll pass.
I want to get my hands on you. Yeah. What's his name, Fintan?
His name is Bjorn. He's a half Danish boy.
Right, Bjorn.
So he's called Bjorn Oisin O'Toole. Isn't that a great name?
That's a great name. I'm just looking, Bjorn Oisin O'Toole. So he's boot.
Bjorn means bear.
I know, but B-O-O-T.
I hadn't thought about that. That's terrible. You've ruined it on me now. I don't want to see him anymore now.
Okay. Right, Fintan, mind yourself. Happy Christmas. Thanks for taking time out. Thank you very much. That's Fintan O'Toole.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Grandma, good morning. Thanks very much. 5155 on radio.rt.ie. Catherine has been on and says, remember when Fintan was first published because I worked with his wonderful sister, Mary, rest in peace, easily one of the best people I ever knew at the time. That was Mary. Anyway, Mary tore around the building, shrieking with pride and delight before making us all read it. I've read and loved his work ever since, whether or not I always agreed with it, says Catherine. Thanks to that, Catherine. And could you please congratulate Aisling Farrell and Thomas O'Connell from Castledermot, who got engaged last Sunday. We're looking forward to a few parties and the wedding when COVID restrictions are over. That's Paddy and Trish and Aoife and David and Cuiva and Joey. Up Kildare, and a thumbs up. And could you wish Holly Flynn a very happy 8th birthday today? Yes, of course. Lots of love and kisses from Granny and Grandad Robinson and Nana and Grandad Flynn. Thanks. So we'll know tomorrow, won't we? We'll know tomorrow what way things are going to go over the coming weeks and maybe for Christmas as well. So that's a big day for the government. Big decisions have to be made. Right. Press that button. There you go. Yeah. Our quiz of today. Great prize this week. A stay at the Riverlea Hotel in Cork, which is a Doyle Collection hotel. Two-night stay. Breakfast each morning. They have an award-winning bar and restaurant, the River Club. They have luxurious bedrooms. Weekends have never looked better. And you can find out more at doycollection.com/Cork. On the line we have Kevin Farley. How are you doing, Kevin?
How are you, Ray? How are things?
Good. You're in Galway City.
Galway City today, yeah.
How's it over there today?
Pretty good. The weather dry, yeah. No, the last couple of days have been excellent, yeah.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah, fresh and clear and blue skies and sunshine and all that sort of thing, yeah. What's your story? Are you at work or what are you doing?
Just off today, so just the kids at home and... just collecting from school and that, so taking it easy today.
No, it's some you've some controversial news from the Farley household. Go on, tell them. Go on.
What's that?
You're putting up the Christmas tree.
Oh, the tree come out. Tree come up today, is right. Yeah,
yes.
Big news today.
Big
all right,
news.
Yeah.
That's 26th of November. It's a bit premature. A lot of people are going to be saying that, Kevin. Can't
absolutely
believe that.
I normally old fashioned. I wait till the first week of December, but. Exceptional year, we said we'll make a change, you know.
I think you're right, but Jenny doesn't agree. We had this debate at home, discussion.
Right,
yeah.
Right. It's a tricky one.
It is a tricky one. Yeah. How did the chat go in your house? How did you swing it?
The wife really made her mind up and that was it. There was no discussion about it.
Okay. And you have three children. What ages are they?
Yeah, 8, 6 and 3.
Oh, it must have been huge excitement then when the Christmas tree goes
up.
Yeah,
no, door. Come back from school, seen the tree up, it was all beginning to look a lot like Christmas type of thing.
Yeah. There you go, you nearly broke into song there. have you got Netflix?
We have.
Yeah, well, Christmas Chronicles 2, it landed yesterday.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, perfect. If you put up the Christmas tree now, that's perfect for this evening.
We might tune into that this evening.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Great, okay. You're up against Brian Bridgman. How are you doing, Brian?
Good, all good.
Yeah, you're in Clondalkin in Dublin 22.
Yes.
And you're cooking the dinner tonight, one of my favourite dishes.
Cooking the dinner, going football, doing everything.
Right, okay. What
the woman's world.
What are you cooking?
Lamb shanks.
Oh, yeah.
Your favourite.
Yeah, they're the ones that sort of just tear away from the bone. And
melt in your mouth.
Melt in your mouth.
Them right away with the bone.
Yeah, yeah. So how long do you have to cook that for?
Oh, you're talking about 3 hours.
Are you? At what heat?
Yeah. At what heat? About 150.
All right, so very low heat. And it's done in a sort of a casserole dish or something, is it?
Yeah, kind of casserole dish, and you just leave them on, and when you take them out, they're lovely.
Yeah.
You put your veg and what have you, your happy days.
And do they create their own gravy, or do you have to, what?
No, the juices come off it. I like the juices off it, and I do have my own bit of mint sauce there if I need it.
Right, lovely. I'm salivating here.
Oh, can't wait to get off the phone to eat them.
Yeah. Who have you got at home?
I have Sinead, my wife, Reese, and Adam, my two boys. One is here, one is working.
Right, okay. And the 10-year-old is mad into soccer.
Both of them are, yeah, but one's working now, so he's a different world for him.
Right. You're a taxi man, so it's been a mad year for you then, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been weird, but... Sure, look, I can't have it all the way, can I?
Yeah, and what are you hoping for Christmas? What do you think's going to happen?
For the COVID to go.
All right, well, that's not going to happen. Like, unless we wake up this morning or tomorrow morning, there's a big news headline going, coronavirus has discovered when Christmas is. That's the only way it's going to change, and that ain't going to happen. But anyway, okay, so good luck, lads. It's a good prize. Five questions each. Answer as quick as you can, and whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. Kevin in Galway and Brian in Clondalkin.
Okay.
Right, Kevin, first question for you. On this day in 1989, Luis Alberto Lacal became president of Uruguay. On what continent is Uruguay?
It's South America.
It is South America. Brian, on this day in 2003, India accepted Pakistan's offer of a ceasefire in Kashmir. On what continent is Pakistan?
Asia.
It's the correct answer. Kevin, your second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
Inside of us, we both know you belong with Victor. You're part of his work, the thing that keeps him going. If that plane leaves the ground and you're not with him, you'll regret it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of your life. We'll always have Paris.
Hey.
He's looking at you, kid.
Hey, in this day, 1942, that film starring Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman premiered in New York. Can you name the film?
Casablanca.
Is the correct answer. Well done, Kevin. Brian, have a listen to this.
Those urges to belong, divergent as they are, can live together more easily if we, Britain and the Irish Republic, can live closer together too.
On this day in 1998, that man became the first Prime Minister of the United Kingdom to address the Dáil. Can you name him?
Tony Blair.
Is the correct answer. Well done. Kevin, on this day in 1859, the last weekly installment of A Tale of Two Cities was published in literary periodical All the Year Round. Can you name the author of A Tale of Two Cities?
The author of A Tale of Two Cities.
1859. I'll
have a guess.
Yeah. Go for it.
And say...
I need it.
Charles Dickens.
Correct answer. Need them a bit quicker.
Charles Dickens.
Yes, correct answer. Yes. Well done. Brian, similar one for you. Yes. On this day in 1865, Alice in Wonderland was published in America. Can you name the author of Alice in Wonderland?
Lewis Carroll.
Is the correct answer. Well done. Kevin, question four is an audio one. Here we go. 25 was the speed limit. So, on this day in 1939, that singer was born in Nutbush, Tennessee. Can you name her?
Tina Turner.
Yeah, 81 today. Happy birthday, Tina.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. Oh, yeah. Still flying it. Right, and an audio one for you, Brian. Thunder only happens when it's raining.
Players only love you when Fleetwood Mac.
Good man. You're in a hurry to get to your lamb shank, aren't you? You're right. The question was, on this day, 1945, John McVie, bassist with that band, was born in Middlesex, England. Can you name the band Fleetwood Mac? It's the correct answer. It's 4-4, down to the wire. Kevin, your final question. On this day in 1922, Charles M. Schulz, the American cartoonist who created the Peanuts comic strip, was born in Minnesota. Can you name the dog in Peanuts?
Dog in Peanuts.
Yeah, need the answer.
I think I'll have a guess. I'll go Snoopy.
Yeah, Snoopy's the correct answer. So, Brian, get this right and we're down to a tiebreak situation. Get it wrong and Kevin goes away with the prize. On this day in 1965, good luck with this, France launched its first satellite, which was named after a popular French cartoon character. He's a small Gallic warrior who has a magical strength potion. Can you name him?
Yes.
French cartoon character, first satellite. Need an answer from you. No.
Wait,
yeah. Need an answer.
What?
Asterix is the correct answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's two E in it. There's two E in it.
My wife got that.
Yeah, I know. She did.
Oh, no, she didn't have to have you anything. Just tell me. I couldn't think.
Yeah.
I couldn't get it.
Yeah. Okay, I tell you what, lads. Now, this is a tiebreak question. It's going to be a guess, so I'll ask the question. I need the answers as quick as you can, Kevin. I need it from you very quickly, Brian, straight after that. And whoever gets
so
closest...
I don't answer this one, do I?
No,
do
you,
I
do, you do. You do. Kevin goes first.
It's a forced answer, is it?
No, it's not. No. It's a guess, right? So it's a duration of a song. So Kevin will give his guess, and then Brian, I'll ask you for your guess, okay?
Okay.
Right, and it's the...
So I just wait, do I?
You just wait, yeah. So on this day in 1980, it'll become clear in a second. On this day in 1982, Eddie Grant was at number one with I Don't Want to Dance. According to Spotify, how long in minutes and seconds is that song, I Don't Want to Dance? Kevin, your guess.
2 minutes and 58 seconds.
Right. Brian, your guess. How long do you think I Don't Want to Dance is? Need an answer for
3 minutes 15.
3 minutes 15. It's 3 minutes and 20 seconds. So, Brian, you're the winner. Well done. Well done. Kevin, hard luck. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug. Mind yourself.
Can I say hello to Grand Crown, Yvonne and Blanche?
You can. You've done that, Brian. Thanks,
Thank
Kevin.
You.
See you. Brian, well done. You're off to the Riverlea Hotel in Cork when all this is over. Right. So enjoy that and enjoy the lamb shanks as well.
Oh,
well done.
Do you need me address?
No, we'll get it from you off air. Okay.
Thank you.
See you now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
A quick reminder of the big Christmas thank you. If there's ever a year to say thanks to someone special in your life, it's this year. And thanks to our good friends at SuperValu, we want to help you give something back with our big Christmas thank you. So all you have to do is nominate somebody in your life who has helped you out. It might be over a lifetime, or it could be just this year. Send us an email with as many details about this person as possible, what they've done for you, how brilliant they are. And then we select five of them, and over a week beginning the 14th of December, we surprise them on air. So with your help, they're by a phone, we ring that number, put them up on air, and then we read out the email to them. And then with the help of SuperValu, we give them a lovely present to say thank you. And I think most times the most important thing is the email. So when you're writing the email, make it count, because if you eventually end up on air, it will be read out. You know, so that's the thing that really counts, because when people are thanked in a very public way, it's very special. So the big Christmas thank you, if you have a nomination, ray@rte.ie, and we'll be doing that from the week beginning the 14th of December. Eddie Grant, did somebody say yes? Eddie Grant, that was number one back in 1982, 2 years before our next guest was born. How are you doing, Rob Carney?
How are you, Ray? Good to hear from you.
No, more, 4 years. Was it 4 years before you were born, 1982? What year were you born in?
I was 86.
86?
So minus four.
Yes, Janie Mac. Great to talk to you. Thanks for taking the call. Your Audis, is it Audi or Audi? What way do you say it, Rob?
It is Audi. I got in trouble an awful long time ago for saying Audi.
Did you?
So,
right.
Audi. Yes.
Audi, right.
I got my wrist smacked.
So when you move to Australia now, all of that's gone, is it? Like, you're not...
Well, you know what? I'm finding it so hard to get a flight to Australia at the moment. I'm half thinking about taking the car over and the boat with me.
That'd be a good adventure, wouldn't it?
It would be a fine adventure, yeah. It's crazy now trying to get flights and visas, and I've never seen so much logistical effort going into one move.
Yeah, but Australia have done a good job on COVID, because we spoke to a number of people, and the state have co-opted, if that's the word, hotels. So when you land, you're put into those hotels. They're like nice prisons, and you have to stay there for 14 days. Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, so get off the plane and in a bus straight to a hotel facility. I believe we don't even get a key card to our own hotel room.
Right.
Now, thankfully, the club have arranged for fitness and gym equipment to be left in the room or a balcony if I am extra special and lucky. So, yeah, it's the one thing that I'm least looking forward to, and it's going to be challenging, that is for sure. But as you say, they've done a really good job. But it helps when you can, you know, lock your borders and have a self-sufficient economy like they have done.
Yes.
It's not something that we would be able to do over here,
no.
Unfortunately.
No, it's a small island and two jurisdictions in the one island as well. So it's very complicated here, not as straightforward as Australia. So this is something that it comes as a surprise, because maybe you were thinking that your rugby career had sort of finished.
Yeah, it definitely did. And I suppose in August, September time, I had come around to the fact that I was going to be finishing up in October. And I was very happy and had come to terms with that decision. I've enjoyed an incredible 15-year period where I've had so much success with so many great teams and coaches. And then it was very late in the day in September time, they got in contact and said, listen, would you be interested in coming down on a 6-month contract to play for the Western Force over in Perth? And to be honest, I didn't have to think too hard about it. It's, you know, such a good opportunity. And it, 6 months in the grand scheme of things is not very long. I just hope I remember how to still play rugby.
You will. Speaking of those 15 years, your 15-year career here, you did everything, didn't you? Like a Grand Slam with Ireland, European Cups with Leinster, and then beating the All Blacks. So you did it all, really.
Yeah, like I say, you know, I was so, I had so much luck in with regards to my timing in terms of some of the teams and coaches that I've been involved with down through the years. And, you know, Grand Slams and beating the All Blacks will always be at the very highest.
Yes.
On that list. Unfortunately, the World Cups will always weigh a little bit heavy on my mind, that we could never advance past the quarterfinal stage. And that is going to be something that is going to be difficult for Ireland every time we go to the next World Cup. It's always going to be talking, can we advance past this quarterfinal stage? Mm. But, you know, there's been so many incredible things that, I've done over the last 15-year period, and, I'm so grateful to have been a part of them.
Yeah. And David's still playing with Leinster.
David's still playing away with Leinster. And
did he beat your tri-tally recently?
He did. I don't know how I scored 42 tries in my career, but he scored his 43rd there 2 weeks ago and overtook me on the all-time all-time try scoring list. But no, it's great for him. He's had, you know, some difficult years over the last few years with injuries and things like that. So I'm no begrudgery from my side at all.
Okay, what's the reaction been to your book?
Yeah, it's been pretty positive, I think. You know, people you meet and things like that are always going to be positive to you. I think no one's going to say anything too badly. You know, I think as they buy more books coming up to Christmas time and more people get to read them, you might get a little bit more feedback and opinion on it. But so far, it's been so good. But I think it's, you know, I was happy with the story that I put out there. It was a fair reflection of my life. And, you know, if some people, you know, don't like it or if they find it a little bit boring, well, then that's okay too.
The older I get, Rob, I think boring is good. Like, you know, because a lot of events in life are unfortunately tragic ones. And like the death of your brother Ross, that was a terrible tragedy in your family's life. And you spoke about it on the Late Late Show. And I'd imagine when you share a story like that with people, that people get in touch, do they?
Yeah, I suppose I was incredibly touched by how many other people it touched. And I don't like to use the word inspiration, but I got so many messages where it gave other people the strength to talk about their tragedies in the past and to maybe rehash it up with their own family. And even speaking to a lot of, you know, parents who have young kids who have lost a kid and they worry about the development of their own child. And I suppose to give them hope that, you know, they can raise children in a normal environment and still, you know, have that level of hope that they will turn into, you know, relatively good people when they're older and not be too scarred by the past.
Yeah. And what age were you when it happened?
I was only 2.5.
So
that is the big difference. I do reference a lot in my book. My older brother, who was 9,
Richard,
and Richard would have had to endure a lot more scars throughout all of this, and it's been something that, you know, has had a much bigger impact on his life than it has on mine. But when you're writing a book too, you want to honor the people and talk about inspirations that have helped you through your life. It was the right thing to do.
So you're going down to Australia, Western Force is the name of the club. And then at the other side of that, you've obviously given a lot of thought to what you're going to do then. I'm just wondering about, because the amount of discipline you have to be a player at international level is huge. And it sort of, I'd imagine, just takes over your life. So are you looking forward to a stage where that isn't there?
Yes and no.
Right.
I was really lucky from an early age that the only thing I ever wanted to do was play rugby for Ireland.
Okay,
and that has been my sole purpose since I was 5 or 6 years of age.
Right. Okay.
So like on one hand, I'm looking forward to the downtime and experiencing life outside of that rugby bubble. But on the other hand, you know, I'm a little bit nervous and scared as to whether I will ever find that purpose again and something that drives me on as much as playing rugby for my country did. So, you know, there's excitement, but there's apprehension there too.
Yeah. And if you talk to people who have, you know, people like Tommy Bowe or whoever who have retired from playing and how it has affected them.
Yeah, you speak to lots of lads, and I suppose the biggest bit of advice that some of the guys that I would have played with who have now retired, their number one advice was always play as long as you can, which is probably another reason why I'm traveling the lengths of the world to go and play with another club. You know, it does take time, and you know, you can't put too much pressure on yourself to come straight out of rugby and find something that you know, a new job that you're passionate about and can get straight into. So it will be a little bit of a learning curve, and I'm sure I'll have to try lots of different things to find out what I'm good at too.
Yeah. So good luck in Australia. Good luck to you and to Jess as well. And thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today. Rob Carney, Audi Ireland brand ambassador. Thanks, Rob. Mind yourself.
Thanks for having me on the show, Ray. Right, good man. Take care.
Bye. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening. Yes. Thursday evening it is.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.